You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman number 2, Detective Comics number 986, Supergirl number 21, Superman number 2, The Flash number 52, Plastic Man number 3, and Red Hood and the Outlaws number 25. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, you said you had some DC news for us. Let's have you kick it off.
Yeah, so these comics were actually announced back in March, but I just happened to notice the ad when we were doing the reading for this week. DC, at least digitally, I'm assuming in print also, were advertising for an upcoming miniseries by Bendis under his own imprint called Jinx World. And it's obviously, so it's his imprint, but DC's the one publishing it. And this specific series is called Pearl. What's exciting about this is that he's teaming up with the artist Michael Gatos, who was the artist that he worked with on Jessica Jones, which was an Alias, which was like one of his most successful and popular series over at Marvel. So that's really cool that those two are working together. The specific kind of like plot for this is that Pearl, the name of the title of the character, is a tattoo artist for the Yakuza, and kind of goes from there. She's trying to get out of that Yakuza world.
Huh. Sounds interesting.
It sounds, yeah. I think it'll be really kind of interesting, kind of that probably a little bit of a crime, noir kind of maybe feel to it. I'm very intrigued to check it out. And the ads are saying it's coming out this month, August. So I'll definitely be checking out at least the first issue just to kind of see what it's like.
Yeah, sounds interesting. All right. And for our next bit of DC news, Jovian Wade is to star as Cyborg in the Doom Patrol live-action series on the DC Universe. So I was surprised to see that they were adding Cyborg to Doom Patrol.
I think they had said that. I think they had mentioned that that's what they were going to do, which was a surprising choice, but it also kind of makes, I think, a little more sense with how it's going to be able to appear in the Titans show. I'm still very curious to see what they're going to do with it. It makes a little more sense if you've got Cyborg in there to kind of connect it more to DC.
Yeah, it sure does. And if we talked about Cyborg being on there, I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure we did at some point, but I could be wrong.
All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Dan Abnett closes his Aquaman run with a Suicide Squad crossover, which I believe is already taking place. So I don't read Aquaman or Suicide Squad, so I can't confirm it, but I thought I saw that crossover was already taking place.
It's definitely an interesting crossover. It's definitely not a character I would think of as frequently crossing paths with them, so that'd be kind of interesting. I'm still really excited personally to see the run that's coming after Abnett. No, his has apparently been really good. Not to take anything away from that, but the new creative team that they have coming on, I'm really curious to see what they do with Aquaman. So that's kind of what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have to talk about it. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Justice League's going to cross over with DeSouza's Monica's Gang. And apparently that's some sort of Brazilian comic. I've never heard of it.
I have not heard of it either.
I don't know. But if you want to read more about that, we have the article posted on the Earth Station DCU Facebook group.
I think it's pretty cool that they're doing it, to be honest. I think, again, DC is doing a really good job of trying to just hit as many different possible people as they can with their comics, which is honestly what you should be doing.
Yeah,
I'm sure. You can't just make comics for us,
right? And I'm sure they'll pick up some Brazilian readers that way too.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. I mean, it's not something that was on my radar, I won't lie, but I nonetheless think it's a cool idea. Because what's the worst that can happen with it? It just doesn't sell that well.
Exactly. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, we got some news coming out of season 5 of The Flash. Now, they said this season is supposed to be all about legacy. And some of the tidbits I found out, we found out that Nora Allen's supposed to be closer to Barry than she is to Iris. So her and Iris's relationship apparently is not in the best place, and they're supposed to reveal why early on. So it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Also found out that Ralph is supposed to be using more of his detective skills in season 5.
Good. That's so, good.
I know. I'm excited about that, too.
I know that they returned Barry to his status quo on the forensics team, but I kind of wanted to see more of him doing detective work with Ralph. They kind of had it, but they had technically within the season he was working with Ralph for a while, but we really only saw maybe what one instance of it.
Yeah, they didn't focus on it really.
Of course,
they didn't really have time to. They should have let it flesh out more in season 5, I think, before returning Barry to a status quo. But who knows? Maybe they'll be working together more. You know, Barry with the police department and Ralph on his own. You never know.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe he'll be working with Joe some too, since Joe's a detective.
It would be interesting. I think that's one thing the show, they always kind of have a little bit of it, but never really enough of the kind of police element to it. I think they get so focused in the Star Labs part of it, which is fine. They kind of lose track of the police aspect of Barry's character.
Now, that's one thing I have to say about the John Wesley Shipp Flash from the 1990s. They focused a lot on the lab stuff. I always found that intriguing.
It's funny to me, to be honest with you, that the Flash didn't turn into a police procedural to a certain extent, because he's the character that would actually work for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's funny to me that, like, Lucifer, on the other hand, is a police procedural, even though that's like not at all what you would expect for that comic character. Both work. I mean, I enjoy both shows, but it's kind of funny that that's how it ended up playing out.
That is funny. All right, and more news for The Flash. Danielle Panabaker, Caitlin, she's going to be directing episode 18. I thought that was pretty cool. It's going to be her first debut of directing.
Yeah, and I know they had Tom Cavanaugh directed at least one episode this past season, if I'm remembering correctly. So that's cool. It's always cool to let the cast members kind of start to stretch their legs creatively and do different things, because I think it helps people, keeps them interested in doing the show too. And when they're invested, you know, that always makes for a better show.
Right. And I just think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all I got for Flash news, except for, of course, as we've announced before, it's returning October 9th. So still feels like a long way off, but
I know. Well, especially the CW ones are always, they always seem further away because the other shows start in like late August, September range. And so you've got that, it's not that long, but you've got that kind of 2 to 3 week period where most TV shows have kind of started back up and you're still kind of waiting for CW.
Yep. All right. And for our last bit of DC news, at a recent comic convention, Stephen Amell states that he'll be adding the goatee in the next season of Arrow.
This must have slipped through our radar somehow, because it's not that, it, you know what I mean? Like, it happened a little bit ago, but when I read it, I was like, how did I not know this?
I don't, yeah.
I'm really excited.
I am too. It's getting him closer to his comic book version. I mean, the way he started off, they've been slowly building him closer and closer to what he is in the comics.
I would be surprised if that's a permanent thing, but even if it's there for a couple episodes, that'd be really cool. Hopefully it's at least a couple episodes and not, you know, one.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Flashpoint.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We don't go in there. You don't want to go in there.
reason, that chamber has no door.
What did she tell you? That it must have been a dream?
Rookie mistake, Doc!
Turn it up to 11, Flask. Let's see what she's got. And smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
No, Doc, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
If you think that's impressive, wait until I get going. The answer's 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help. Ugly.
Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, Season 3, coming soon.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Let's talk Catwoman number 2. All right, well, this issue opens up with Catwoman versus Catwomen. Not much of a fight, really, because we find out the other Catwomen are hired actresses, except for one that seems to report back to the governess, or the governor's wife.
There seemed to be at least like one or two competent fighters in there, which I was surprised when she said we're all actresses. I was like, you guys put up a... I mean, granted, you had a massive numbers advantage, but you guys put up a decent fight for not knowing how to fight.
Yeah. Another great issue of Catwoman, I thought.
Oh, yeah, it was really good. I mean, it's incredible how quickly Joelle Jones has built up this villain as such a nasty character.
Well, part of the problem is she's freaking ugly.
I mean, even more so than, I mean, yes, she is. Like, her looks are terrifying, but it's her actions, too, that are really brutal. And we see in this instance, she breaks break her hand, right? Of the Catwoman that reports back.
Yeah, they like take a hammer to it or something.
Oh yeah,
it was brutal.
They clearly then did something else after that. So I'm sure we'll see what that was. But man, yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued by this villain very quickly, and she hasn't even done that much yet. That's, I think, the thing that's most impressive at what Jones is doing is through just how intriguing her look is as a character, and then just the very few actions that she's done. You're like, what is this character? I want to know more.
Yeah, we have no idea what her plan is either. I mean, yeah. We see the governor state he has cancer and is stepping down, and she seems to be surprised by this. It says something about stepping up her plan or something.
Yeah.
So we don't even know what the plan is or why she had all these Catwomen and stuff, but it's very intriguing.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the other thing I really liked in this comic was we really got to see Catwoman truly struggling with being alone now after the breakup, and I liked seeing that and really delving into. This is what I was kind of hoping, was that both Batman and Catwoman would kind of explore that on their own, and it's working for me. It's working out really well so far because each comic is able to really dedicate a lot of time to their specific character and how they're handling it.
Yeah. I thought that scene was heartbreaking when you just have Selina lying in her bed staring at her engagement ring.
Yeah.
And we see the one dude ask her for that ring as payment, and she kind of like is like, no, I'm keeping this one. Whether she's going to be with Bruce or not, that engagement ring has a lot of sentimental value.
Was his mother's ring, correct? I'm pretty sure.
Was it? I can't even remember. You might
almost,
be right.
I'm like 90% sure that's his mother's ring. So that would be, I don't even, not even Catwoman would give that away.
Yeah. And he hasn't even asked for it back or anything. course, yeah, we know they haven't spoken since the incident, so.
Understandable.
Yeah. We get to the end of this issue, and I thought it kind of wrapped up abruptly with the feeling that Selena was walking into a trap when she went to that party.
Yeah, I have to say, this is a very fast-paced comic. Like she really, Jones covers a lot of ground really quickly.
Yeah, if you guys haven't been reading it, I highly recommend it. It's really good.
It is so good. I can't say enough how much I personally enjoy her art style. It's so good, and I think it's so well-suited to Catwoman in particular. It's excellent. It's the best Catwoman comic I've personally read. There may be other ones out there that are also pretty good, but this one is so far just really good. Highly, highly recommend, if you like Catwoman at all, to check out this comic.
I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics number 986. Now, I love the fact that Batman announced his decision to Karma's ultimatum from last issue by interrupting the airwaves with the bat signal. I thought that was freaking cool.
That was really cool. I really liked that moment.
So, I thought that was pretty cool. And if you guys don't remember how we left last issue, Karma had basically kidnapped a school bus full of kids and basically told Batman, if you don't bring me your sidekicks, you know, I'm going to kill these kids. I knew Batman would come up with something besides just handing over his sidekicks. That wasn't really an issue.
Yeah.
Now, I thought it was pretty cool when Batman met up with Orphan.
Yes.
The thing I really liked about this issue is he didn't send her home. He realized he needed her help.
I gotta say, I didn't totally understand the Orphan subplot with this. I liked her personal involvement in this, but the weird subplot with Karma trying to recruit her, I don't know if we're gonna see more of that because he's not done yet. It seemed like it was a plot thread that was kind of just left dangling.
I think the very first issue of this arc, he said something about wanting to bring Orphan on.
Right, yeah, I know, and he mentions it again here, but you never really get, there's never really a payoff for it.
Not yet. I don't think we're going to see the payoff on it yet. Yeah. He says something about a dark streak in her. He's going to try to turn her to his side.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see that, because like he mentions it again in this one, and then I know he's not been completely defeated, but it was like, well, that was kind of odd that they brought her in on that scene and then didn't do any interaction between the two of them. It's not necessarily a complaint, it was just not what I was expecting.
I'm expecting one of two things. Either he's going to have some plan that psychologically flips her to his side, or he's going to try to recruit her and she's going to not go along with it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I have to say, the one thing I did not like in this issue was the way they used Batgirl. That was, I was not a fan.
No, it was a waste of her abilities.
It was, I thought, a particularly bad look in the modern environment to explicitly leave Batgirl out and have Black Lightning say that he can't worry about protecting her while he's fighting. And it was like, maybe pick a different character? I don't know. Pick the signal? I'm just saying, that was, I thought, a very poor decision. And also one that didn't make sense. Like, Batgirl is the most competent fighter of all of the, I mean, okay, sure, Orphan technically is, but like Batgirl is the most experienced.
Yeah, because she's been around longer than even Orphan.
She knows what she's doing. I would argue she probably knows what she's doing as a hero more than Black Lightning does.
Yeah,
at least the one that's being portrayed in this comic.
Right, and the Batgirl we see in the Batgirl series is definitely more competent than the way she's being portrayed here.
And they even have her argue, but then she just kind of accepts it and then just essentially just acts as Oracle, which I get, maybe like you want to use her as Oracle, but you can't, like, I'm sorry, but you can't, like, she's Batgirl. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Right. And she's a very technical Batgirl.
Yeah, so. And I don't get me wrong. Obviously, she's still insanely computer savvy, and that's evident in her own series.
It's also evident in Nightwing series. He just had a techno villain that Barbara basically comes to his aid to help with.
Yeah, but she's absolutely not. She's not going to be satisfied just being Oracle. Like, she just wouldn't. That's just not in her character, her DNA. She wants to be out there fighting. So I don't know. That was the one thing. Like, I enjoyed most of the issue, and then that one part, I was like, "Ooh, that was a particularly bad choice." Creatively, I thought.
I thought another cool thing in this issue is when we had Black Lightning contain the bomb, but when Orphan went to rescue the children, she took off her mask. Not that any of the kids would know who she is, but
yeah.
You know, just to show, hey, I'm just like you, basically.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
I agree. I'm curious to see where we go from here and what potentially they're going to be doing with Orphan and Karma. I can't see a very interesting story with that. So I guess part of me was hoping they'd wrap it up this issue, because it was like you said, there's really only two ways it turns out. He flips her, which I don't think would be a particularly satisfying story, or he tries to and she says no, which is incredibly predictable.
Now, I got the sense that the next story is not going to be about Karma, but he's going to be back at some point in the series, like ongoing villain kind of thing.
I would agree with that.
That's what it felt like to me. So I'm expecting next issue to be a totally different story with the, with Black Lightning continue the training of the kids and stuff. So at least that's what I'm expecting. And I thought it was pretty interesting that Batman was bringing in Katana to help him train against Karma.
Yes.
I'm wondering what the heck is he going to teach him?
Zen. I don't know.
You know, that was the first thing that crossed my mind. I was like, okay, what is she going to train Batman to do?
Especially something that Batman wouldn't know already. Be curious. It has to be some martial art, or like some mindset that goes along with, you know, a particular martial art. But like, wouldn't Batman know that? I'm not a huge fan of Batman knows everything, but even that one, I'm like, I feel like Batman would know that.
You would think that, or he, to me, Batman, if Batman wants to learn something else, you know, like when in his younger days, he would go to the master of that, whatever he was learning.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he thinks she's the master of whatever he's going to be learning. I don't know.
I mean, that much I think is clear. I would say that is definitely true.
So, not really sure, but I'm really curious what she's going to be teaching him.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Supergirl number 21. We know from the miniseries Bendis did that Supergirl was going to be going off into space. So, we get the beginning of that story here. We see Kal-El try to talk Kara into not rushing off into space. But she points out he is not as connected to Krypton as she is, only because she used to live on Krypton and grew up for some of her life on there. And Kal's only home has been Earth. So Krypton is more theoretical to him than it is to her. And she really needs to seek out the truth of what happened to her planet, to their planet. But I thought that was kind of interesting. And I love the fact that he came back and basically apologized to her with his little note.
I agree. It felt very much like Superman.
Yep.
I really liked the writing in this comic. I thought it was a great setup for her story and kind of establishing the status quo, giving her crypto, which I thought was super cool that she's going to have, you know, her kind of her buddy tagging along with her. I did think it was let down by the art, though. I thought the art was at best bland.
Okay. I knew you were going to bring up the art, because when I saw the art too, I was like, this isn't top notch here.
It was like not good. It was the kind of art that you on one of your worst selling titles, you have like a last minute, you need somebody to do the art on that issue. That's what this art looked like to me. And it was like, but this is a book I feel like you're trying to push. Like, it's got Superman just set up this story that a lot of people are going to kind of be intrigued by. And this is the comic that's handling it. I'm sorry, but get somebody better.
I have to agree with you. I knew you were going to mention the artwork in this because it just was subpar in my opinion. But
I thought it was a real disservice to the comic. I think the comic is better than the art. But I think if you just flip through the comic, I think it gives a different impression of what the comic is.
Yeah, the writing definitely carries this story. Now, the other thing I liked about this issue was when Kara takes Rogelzar's axe to Hal Jordan and has him scan it. I thought that was pretty interesting. And yeah. It comes up restricted. Of course, Hal has to give her a speech about seeking justice, not revenge. and I thought it was kind of cool that he was talking about his own experience when he went down the dark path. So
rather dark path, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh, I liked that interaction a lot. I understood that Supergirl would dismiss it, but I would have preferred if she didn't seem to basically dismiss it completely. I was like, he just raised an extremely good point. Parallax is not a minor deal.
No, he's not. Now, that that new suit that Kara's got that collects solar energy and lights up the S-Shield, I thought that was cool. I love that idea.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, if it was better drawn, that'd even be better.
I was thinking that. Yep.
So, I'm really looking forward to more of this, especially with Supergirl going off to MOGO. So, we're, of course, going to encounter more Green Lantern stuff. So, I'm excited about that. And I'm definitely excited about the addition of Crypto. I think he's going to bring some comedy to the comic.
And I think having a companion with Supergirl is good. I just think that makes it gives her something to bounce off of, so that you don't have, because sometimes you can get first person narration that gets kind of silly, where it's like they wouldn't really be thinking this. It gets sort of Silver Age-y. I think it's better if they can kind of talk out loud to somebody that's actually there.
Right, and talking out loud to Crypto would fit the bill for that. So,
yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Superman number 2. I have to say about this issue, I love the fact that Bendis is involving the Justice League in this story without involving the Justice League in this story.
Yeah. I thought he used it really well. It felt like it was taking place in the DC world and not just in Superman's little bubble.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. If the Earth as a whole is supposed to be in the Phantom Zone, that's not something that only Superman would handle.
Yes. And I liked how Bendis has him involving the Justice League without involving the Justice League. So he's interacting with them, but they haven't actually done anything to help or been able to help. Which is kind of cool, because I like to see Superman try to take this on by himself.
Yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. It keeps it as Superman's book while still making it a part of the bigger universe.
Now, one thing I thought there was a little too much of in this story, and that was Superman's monologuing at the beginning. I mean, it's interesting, but ultimately, it didn't really move the story along that much.
That's fair.
So, then the other thing I thought was weird was we had an abrupt change of point of view to Rogelzar when he confronts
the Nuclear Man. It was a little quick. I had to reread a little bit for it. It was like, oh, well, I'm not reading Superman anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of abrupt, I thought.
Yeah.
But we did get to see the payoff for the Nuclear Man and Bendis's bet.
It was really cool, but it was almost a little bit of a letdown. I was like, oh, we couldn't have done a little bit more with him.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It was a letdown. I would have liked to see him longer.
Well, he introduced him so well. I was like, okay, no, I can buy into this. And then he just immediately destroyed it, which that part's fine, but I would have liked like a little bit more. Like Bendis really like almost wrote his introduction too well.
He made him an interesting villain. I actually thought maybe we'd see him go up against Superman, but then found out quickly he wasn't.
I thought they might have like a little mini flashback or something, or maybe they will. Maybe that's possible that they might go. It might be a flashback at some point that reincorporates him.
Could be, but something tells me we're done with him.
Probably. I'm just saying, we know that there's something about Krypton that happened that Rogozar took particular offense to.
Was Nuclear Man from Krypton? I don't know.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he wasn't. I don't remember the details of that movie particularly.
I don't remember either. I think I've watched it once.
I distinctly remember his nails because I remember it being a weird focus.
Oh yeah, his nails that lit up with electricity or something, or sparked or something like that.
Yeah.
Now that you mention that, I remember that, but I don't remember much about that either. So we didn't really get a confrontation between Rogozar and Superman. They just had this staring match for a few panels there, and then Superman flies off to the Fortress of Solitude where Flash was already waiting on him.
Now, this was, I thought, really interesting, though, this scene here, because Wally at one point mentions that he thinks he's forgetting which Barry, but then he takes off his mask and it's Wally.
Yeah, that was weird. I was kind of confused and had to go back and relook at it.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, what's up with this? That was really intriguing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something really interesting I've mentioned before that occasionally that's one thing that's hard to do with comics because of the different way people are drawn, but that's one where you can do because of the distinct hair color.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yep.
obvious. You don't have to explicitly say it's Wally. That's one where you can just visually show that it's not the same Flash.
It's intriguing what's going on. The issue basically ends with, if I remember right, Superman's holding the Flash in his arms, if I remember right. And
I believe so.
And he's basically thinking that he might not see his family again. So it was a good issue. Not too much happened in it, but we had enough.
It did feel short. I would agree with that. It felt like it ended, and I was like, oh, I was just getting into this.
Yeah. So Bendis is doing a great job with Superman in Action Comics and in the regular Superman title. I'm impressed.
I have to agree. I know I was extremely hesitant about it, but so far they've been pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm happy with it. All right. Well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do more comics talk.
Welcome to the Soul Forge, a place of silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem. Join your host, Sean Vanderloo, as he guides you through the adventures of living. Together, we'll talk about life and love, sex and dating, joy and heartache, memories and loss, and so much more. Don't worry, it's not nearly as pretentious as it sounds. Get ready for life, the universe, and everything on the Soul Forge.
SoulForgePodcast.com.
And we're back. Let's talk Flash number 52. So I thought it was cool that Barry gathered all the Flashes from across the multiverse and tried to get answers to his questions about these new forces that were unleashed when the speed barrier was broken.
It was so cool. It was the same thing. It was almost too cool. It was like, wow, why are we stopping with that? Let's do a whole issue.
I have to tell you, I love me some Bizarro Flash.
That was the thing. I was like, this scene is too good to be this short. Like, I need a whole comic of this. I hope that comes back. I really hope that comes back because that was awesome.
That was awesome. I don't know if we'll see it again or not, but it was very interesting. I wouldn't even have thought about gathering the multiverse to ask him these questions.
Flash, of all people, besides Superman, Flash is the one that makes the most sense to do something like that, too.
Yeah, it sure is.
So it was one of those things, as soon as I saw it, I was like, this makes perfect sense. Like, this is really cool. And then he basically waved a goodbye. I was like, no, Barry, damn it, go back.
We find out the Trickster escaped from Blackgate Penitentiary, and
Well, no, he hasn't. He's been taken out undercover because they're trying to put together a case against the warden.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'm glad you reminded me of that.
And one thing I thought was weird was I get that they are trying to keep the warden from figuring out that this investigation is going on because that would ruin their whole case. I totally get that part. But their reluctance to clue Barry in on what was going on, I thought was bizarre, because Barry definitely would not be on the warden's side, and she would know that. His coworker would definitely know that Barry was not a warden ally.
Yeah, that's true, but are Barry and her still kind of at odds?
I didn't get that impression, but it's possible. I mean, it's been a while. It's been a while since we've had an interaction with them.
Yeah, it has been. So I can't exactly remember. But we do see that Barry's mistrust of Commander Cold allows the Trickster to get away. And we also see these new para-angel villains who seem to be after the Trickster.
They seem to be after the Trickster to stop whatever the investigation is. But the warden doesn't seem to know about it still. So I'm curious to see who... Somebody clearly knows and is trying to stop the Trickster from talking. But it must be somebody... I don't know why... It has to be somebody working with the warden, but then why wouldn't they tell the warden?
Yeah. Doesn't make sense there. I gotta say, I know I had the Trickster as one of my top five last week, but I don't really care for this version of the Trickster that much.
I especially did not care for the one we get at the end, where he gets in...
swallowed up by the earth.
Yeah, well, and he gets infected, so to speak, by this... I think it was the Strength Force.
Yep.
I'm still so out on those. I know that the writer's really trying to push this, and it basically looks like part of what these new arcs are going to be is Flash and Cold kind of investigating these different forces, but I'm not buying into them.
Yeah, I'm not that interested in them either. I mean, it's to me it feels like, hey, the Green Lantern stuff was cool when we had all these different rings. Let's try to do different forces with the Speed Force. I don't know, it's not working. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Plastic Man number 3. So many jokes, so freaking hilarious.
Both the writing and the artwork in this has just been top notch. I mean, the different Plastic Man transformations have been so good.
Harley Quinn, Buttface, My Little Pony. It was just freaking hilarious.
The Harley Quinn one, I thought in particular, was really funny as a kind of meta commentary on that movie.
Yeah, that was funny. And the butt face thing, oh man, I just died laughing. It was the artwork that made it so hilarious.
Gail Simone's writing has been very, very good for this title, but the artwork is really... It's the two of them. It's exactly what the best comics are, where both the writer and the artist are just working together to create this awesome, awesome project that really just one, like, good art but not good writing, or, you know, good writing and not good art couldn't do. You only get a comic this good when you've got both creators firing on all cylinders.
And they definitely are in this. We see in this issue that Plastic Man's main objective is to get the girl to safety, which, of course, he eventually does.
With the help of Man-Bat, which was cool.
Yeah.
I was surprised at the lack of anything from Man-Bat. I thought there would be like some sort of like nod of acknowledgement or anything, and it just sort of stared at each other.
The other thing I thought was interesting is the strippers started investigating things. Yes. I was like, why are they getting involved for? But we find out that when the strippers start investigating things, they go and interview the neighbor that accused Eel O'Brien, or Plastic Man, of killing his former partner in crime. And she actually has pictures of Plastic Man committing the crime. But one of the strippers spots alien writing, though, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea where the mystery for this story is going. I am just enjoying the ride.
Right. And then we find out the mobster finds out about Eel O'Brien is actually Plastic Man, and he's wanting to recreate the accident. And the way that ended, I wasn't sure if he shot the tank or what he was doing. Was he trying to infect himself or just his girlfriend?
Girlfriend.
To see what would happen?
Yeah, he was basically trying to recreate Plastic Man with her.
Oh, did he shoot her?
Yeah.
Oh, and he was trying to shoot her and it go through the tank, maybe, and then the stuff splashed. Huh, interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a perfect combination of really villainous, but also kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Like, which is sort of the tone of Plastic Man. So I thought it was perfect. It was like, wow, that dude's definitely a jerk. That's dark, but also kind of ridiculous.
Now, question for you. Do you think we're going to get... Do you think she's going to be dead? Or do you think we're going to get a woman Plastic Man? Or a plastic woman?
I think we're going to get something. I don't know if she'll be Plastic Woman, so to speak. She'll definitely be something, though. So meta of some sort. I think it's probably going to be... It's not going to go well. I think it's going to... be some sort of monstrosity, to be honest with you. And I also think it's going to go really poorly for the boyfriend.
Oh yeah, definitely go poorly for the boyfriend. But do you think it's going to be a new enemy of Plastic Man? Or do you think they'll end up teaming up or something?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I want to say villain, but then I also think that it's only a mini series, so I don't know that she can't probably be the final boss, so to speak. So I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
she's not going to be...
the part. If it was an ongoing series, I'd be confident that she'd be a villain. But I'm not so sure because there's not enough issues left for her to be a villain. And then also, there's clearly an end game, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think it can be her because it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
So then I don't know that... I'll be curious to see what they do.
Yeah, I am too. This is another miniseries that's great.
Oh yeah, I am so thoroughly enjoying this. I'm already a little bit disappointed that it's only 6 issues. It's that good.
And we're halfway through right now.
I know. I'm really hoping that they'll do another mini. I will say, I think part of the reason why it's so good is because they were able to just focus on one story and have the time to be able to just do it. I don't think that's a coincidence, but at the same time, I hope that they get another 6 issues down the road sometime.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, because it's that good.
So. Yeah, it is that good. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 25. And our audience is going, why are we talking about this? Because we haven't talked Red Hood since we talked about the Rebirth issue a long time ago, but I thought this was important. I basically saw a news article on it and thought this was important to talk about. So the issue opens up with a flashback scene where Batman and Robin, the Jason Todd Robin, of course, were in some sort of accident with the Batmobile where they ended up in water. So we see Jason Todd rescue Batman, who stopped breathing. He gives him mouth to mouth, and Jason gets Batman breathing again. And Batman happens to mention that anything ever breaks up our team, it's going to be your doing or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we jump back to the present, where Red Hood is surrounded by police who are accusing him of killing Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin. Apparently, this happened at the end of issue 24.
This was definitely the end of an arc that I was like, I don't even know what's going on right now. I felt like watching the season finale to a show that I had not read. I'm sorry, not watched the previous episodes of.
And of course, we see Jason make his escape onto some invisible floating headquarters or something. I'm sure Red Hood and the Outlaw fans know what'd be going on. I did find it interesting the relationship between Jason Todd, Bizarro, and Artemis.
Yeah, I agree. I know that would have been the big thing that they were kind of exploring in this comic. And I know briefly Bizarro was way more intelligent than he normally is. Clearly that changed. And I feel really dumb for not knowing what was going on, but I was like, there's clearly some major things happened. The whole world is kind of falling apart around them as far as like everything they've built up as a team. And I was like, but I don't know how.
Yeah, it was kind of odd coming into this, but I thought some important things came out of this, especially the Batman versus Red Hood.
Yes.
Because, you know, with him killing the Penguin, I'm wondering, is the Penguin really dead? Are we not going to see him in the DCU anymore?
Nah.
I thought that was kind of odd, but
it definitely felt like there was a misunderstanding going on. It felt like Red Hood had not done something quite as bad as Batman was taking it out on him for, and that was kind of, but for Red Hood, it was sort of like, fine. I'm not the bad guy. You're treating me like the bad guy.
So
let's be that way.
Right. So we have the fight between Batman and Jason Todd. Batman's basically telling him, you broke the deal. You know, way back when we reviewed it, issue one, he told him he could operate in Gotham City as long as he didn't kill anyone. This was the other point why I wanted to talk about this. You remember a few weeks ago when we talked about Damon, when we thought he was killing, or at least I thought he was killing, and then we found out he wasn't. This is the exact reaction I would expect out of Batman. You know, he got involved to take out Jason. He wasn't going to let him go around killing. So right after Batman declares no more Red Hood, Bizarro shows up and kind of whisks him away. And we see this weird scene where Bizarro and Artemis seem to go to some other dimension. Is that what you got out of that?
Yeah.
So, not sure what that was all about. I'm sure if we were regularly reading the title, we'd probably know. And then after that, we get another Batman versus Jason Todd, part two of the fight. And Batman basically stops Jason, rips the bat symbol off. When we know that's symboling that, hey, you're not part of the bat family anymore. And then what was really odd was Arsenal, Roy Harper showing up. And basically rescues Jason Todd and takes him away.
Yeah, and we know we're getting a big costume change and a new sort of creative direction for the series. I'm surprised that they're doing this. I didn't. Usually when you have this sort of creative shakeup, it's to kind of rejuvenate the series a little bit. I don't know what the sales are for it. I would have assumed Red Hood always sells way better than I think it does. So I'm a little surprised that they're doing this.
Well, they're getting a creative change. This was the end of that creative team's run on the series. So I know this was their wrap up to the series, and a new creative team supposed to be taking over with issue number 26. It felt like what we read in issue one was wrapping up here in issue 25.
Makes sense. Oh, yeah. That definitely got that. I just didn't know what it was.
So, and apparently the new creative team's taking it in a new direction. And like, I think it was last week. It was last week or the week before we announced on DC News about Jason Todd's new suit.
Yeah.
So, But yeah, I just wanted to kind of touch on this because important stuff were happening on it. And if you're interested in Red Hood and the Outlaws,
don't start with this issue.
Yeah, well, 26 seems to be a good jumping on point, so.
Yeah.
It's not really one I'm interested in continuing reading. I'm not really into anti-heroes that much, which I've mentioned before, but I thought it was important that we should either at least touch on this, especially since it was kind of a wrap up.
Yeah.
And had to do with the Bat family and Jason Todd leaving it, so going in a totally new direction. Because we have seen him in some of the Batman issues and Detective Comics issues we've covered. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. You got any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, since we saw him pop up in this week's Superman issue, I thought I would reference the widely regarded greatest Superman movie of all time, Superman IV, Quest for Peace. Universally beloved film with zero flaws. Nuclear Man is that's the movie that he appears in. He's got, like I said, the only distinct memory of that movie is Nuclear Man's nails growing out. I have no idea why. That's the one thing I remember about it, but I do.
I totally forgot all about that too until
you
mentioned it.
If you want to watch a truly masterpiece film, 10 out of 10, watch something else. But if you want to see the movie that Nuclear Man comes from, Superman IV, Quest for Peace.
Well, we know it's going to be on the DC Universe, so you better get signed up for it so you don't miss it. Because they're supposed to be having all four of the Christopher Reeve movies on there, I heard. So you'll be able to check it up on there.
It's something I would probably want to watch all four, just to rewatch them, but would have to really like kind of prepare myself, I think, for the second two.
Yes. Yeah, I know what you mean. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the Walmart exclusive 100-page Giants, because Superman issue number 2 is out and Justice League of America number 2 is out, and I got both of them. I noticed when I went into Walmart last, at least the one I'd been to before that was not restocking their comics very good. I went in there this time. They had pretty much everything. They had at least 3 copies of Teen Titans number 1. And they had the Batman issue number 1. They had plenty of copies of it. And they had plenty of copies of these issue number 2s. Now, the issue number 1 of Superman and Justice League were both gone. They replaced them with issue number 2. But they seemed to have plenty of copies of it there. So if you've been having problems getting these, recheck your Walmart. They seem to be carrying more copies of them now, which is cool. I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to read them either. Got to read the stuff for the podcast first. All right, next week. Next week, we'll be talking Batgirl number 25, Batman number 53, Justice League number 6, and we're going to be catching up with the Green Lanterns. We're going to be talking Green Lanterns number 50 through 53. And we're going to be talking about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 42 through 50. Though Cletus and I have reviewed some of those already, but we're going to be kind of wrapping up that series and putting it to bed.
I'm going to be taking a brief hiatus next week and then...
You got to talk at least the Green Lanterns arc with Simon and Jessica.
No, I'll do it. It's so Green Lantern.
Issue number 50 of Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns, that series is done. But the Simon and Jessica series is wrapping up in October with, I believe, issue number 57 is what I saw. So they're going to be wrapping up that story. And I kind of glanced at the story arc. It looks really interesting. So I'm excited to review that one. All right. Well, if you'd like to give us feedback on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so. How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.